This is a Beanbag Chair Media production.
We are fucking superstars.
Hi guys, and welcome to Anime Noise.
I'm Garrett. I'm a performing musician by trade, graduated with a bachelor's degree in music production, and have been binging anime for almost 2 decades.
And I'm Emily. I'm a classically trained violinist and have been indulging in the animes since I was a wee little human.
And this is an anime review podcast, where we help the new viewer decide where they want to start while taking the superfan on a deep dive into the overlooked realm of music and sound effects.
Hola a todos! ¿Cómo están?
Wow, Emily, that's such good Spanish.
You know, keeping it worldwide.
Definitely. Shout out to all the Spanish speakers out there.
Yeah, don't judge me too hard. It's been a while since I've been in the kitchen.
Yeah. Is that where you learned all your Spanish?
All of it. I took Spanish in high school, and I literally, was able to manage to get myself by. You learn so much more in a kitchen. It's the same with cooking. It's the same with learning a new language.
Well, I mean, I feel like you're thrown in the middle of a work environment. So you gotta learn quick.
Because they're not gonna listen to you if you're saying it in English and they don't speak any English. It's a lot easier for me to be like, well, you know what? I wanna learn Spanish anyways. This is gonna happen.
There you go.
Yeah.
And you did.
I did. Welcome back, everybody.
Yeah, if you can't tell at this point, you're on Anime Noise, baby.
Yeah.
We are excited to do the episode today. It is on season 2 of My Hero Academia. And the new season just came out, too.
Hell yeah, it did.
The first episode just came out.
We're staying relevant.
Fuck yeah. I got a
trendy
new episode out
this
weekend. So I'm a huge fan of My Hero Academia. I was not a huge fan of the first episode of...
I was not. Especially coming out of season four.
Yeah, that was too epic.
We were so excited about the finale of season four. Like, we watched it sitting on our bed. We remember when it happened.
Oh, yeah. It was too intense.
Yeah.
It was so good.
Weren't we, doing something that night, too?
I don't remember.
I think we were a little intoxicated.
Oh, were we?
I think we were coming down.
We were coming down from a good time.
Yeah. Maybe that's why it was really epic.
It was even more epic on that. Yeah, fuck yeah.
Oh, okay, guys. Well, we're happy to have you here again today, continuing on our My Hero Academia trend.
Yes.
And I think we should just jump into it, get started. We've rambled already from the very start of the episode.
Yeah, we got plenty of time now. Our platform
allows us to have a certain amount of time, and guys, we barely made it.
Barely. We're actually 2 seconds over the time limit on the podcast distribution website, so
yeah.
But they didn't charge us, thank God.
Thank goodness.
I worked really hard to get it down.
We did. We had to change around our songs. We had to do things. We did things, guys.
Yes. All right, let's get back to My Hero Academia season 2. It aired from April to September of 2017. It has 25 episodes total, episodes 14 through 38 of the series, and it covers the manga volumes 3 through 8.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Are we ready to get into the music?
I think that's all we need to do, right?
Yeah, we already did all of the credentials. We do this every time.
Unless you want to just leave some silence for, you know, dramatic pause.
Bum, bum, bum.
Fucking weirdo. Yes, get right into the music, Emily. The second intro.
Yeah, so this is Peace Sign by Kenshi Yonezu. The song was released in 2017 as his 7th single. Later on the album Bootleg, it peaked at number 2 on the Oricon. And the album won Album of the Year at the 60th Japan Record Awards. And this album also helped him propel his career as a star.
Fuck yeah.
Like, this was it. This was the album.
This was the one. It makes sense. It's a pretty good intro.
Yeah. No, I like this one. I like it. And then he also, that same year, won the 2017 Crunchyroll Awards for Best Opening.
Oh, that's right, because he beat out
Attack on Titan.
Linked Horizon. I don't think it's better than Linked Horizon, But, you know, I didn't vote on the Crunchyroll Awards in 2017.
All right. So let's get on to about Kenshi Yonezu. He began his music career in 2009 as a Vocaloid musician. Garrett, would you like to enlighten them of what we've now found out as a Vocaloid musician?
Yeah, I had to look this up because I was like, what the fuck is that? I should know what it is. I'm just not really into electric music production. That's not my genre of choice. So I didn't really know what the term Vocaloid meant. Basically, it's like MIDI vocals, like pitch changes and all that stuff. I just watched a commercial about it with terrible acting.
The horrible actor.
Terrible acting. But it's basically like the really robotic sounding. It sounds like a real voice, but you can manipulate it. It's like manipulating samples. It's MIDI vocals. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Very simple way to put it.
Yeah. It's what you get when you get those like holographic anime girls on stage. You know, some of them have those Vocaloid ones. And this guy went under the name Hachi, and Hachi used an 18-year-old anime voice for his music.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. So Yonezu then debuted under his own name in 2012 and he still actually uses the name Hachi.
He does.
Like, he still does the Vocaloid stuff. Like, he's like a big internet sensation in that way.
Interesting.
Yeah. He writes and composes all of his own music. So under both names, they're all his own. He's also an illustrator. He draws and animates his own music videos. And he was also featured in Rockin' on Japan magazine with his art.
That's really cool.
Which I thought was really cool. Like, he's just a one-man show. He just does it all.
He really is.
Yeah. And then he helped create an independent record label with seven other musicians called Bloom. Well, not with an N. It's not something that pops. It's a Bloom.
Bloom.
Like Luma. Meluma.
You weirdo. When did he form Bloom?
In 2011.
Nice.
Yeah.
So he really is like all
He's
over
like
the
a one-man
place.
Jam. Yeah. And funny enough, and this makes me like him even more, he considers Bump of Chicken, Asian Kung Fu Generation, and Radwimps as his musical influences.
Which are all great musical influences.
All great
influences. I don't really remember Bump of Chicken, though. I swear I've heard of them.
We've heard of them. I'm pretty sure somebody else has used them as an influence.
Oh, yeah. I feel like I've actually heard their music. I mean, I definitely know Asian Kung Fu Generation. Love them. And obviously,
we love Radwimps.
You know I love the Radwimps. They're fucking badass. But I'll have to look up Bump of Chicken after this.
Yeah. So he's also featured in the movie Fireworks, Should We See It from the Side or the Bottom, the movie Children of the Sea, and March Comes in Like a Lion, which, guys, we did you all wrong this month. We did you all wrong.
What do you mean? We should have done
March. We should have done like March Look Comes in Like a Lion.
It and certainly now we came in to... for a fucking lion, like, or like a lion for me.
Yeah, that's true.
Fucking March allergies. I thought I was over them. Every year in Austin has four allergy seasons. All four seasons have some sort of allergy for somebody in Austin. Mine is spring allergies. Didn't happen anywhere else that I've ever lived, only in Austin. And it usually happens like March 1st on the nose. But this year we had that freeze and it delayed all of the tree jizz in the air. So now...
God,
this fucking past week, that's what it is. It's fucking tree jizz. The trees are non-consensually jizzing into the air and it's getting in my nose and I'm dying.
They
I sneezed like 100 times
they were here
the other
first.
Day. We literally stopped counting after 100.
That's true. We did.
I was so mad. I fucking hate March in Texas. Only in Texas. I don't hate March. All of March. But yeah, we should have done like, it made me think of every anime
month.
With like Black March and anything with a March in it that was just
I know we could have done so much more for you and now you're gonna have to wait for that one until next March, so just hope you know.
Well, yeah, March came in like a lion and bit my fucking face off, so
well that leads note. Into a great way to let's listen to it.
I'm
The vocals were done really well. I like the production value on the vocals.
Oh, yeah. It blends really well with the instrument, too.
Yeah. And he doubled it, maybe even tripled it.
Yeah.
And there's a harmony. I think. Could just be more doubled vocals. Overall, it's a pretty simple song. Animation fits. Cool guitar riff.
That guitar riff is my favorite.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's a great song. It's generic, but I still like it.
Yeah, it's very simple. I feel like it would be an easy song for us to cover if you ever wanted to cover it. It's not bad. It's just like a... It is what it is. I didn't dislike it. I still think it fits the... At least the music and the animation go pretty well together.
Yeah. No, I think in season two, the sequences... I like all of the sequences. I think it's fitting for the show.
Yeah.
Like, regardless of the song, the sequences work.
Yeah. It's definitely not my favorite intro. And... I mean, you already know what my favorite intro is from My Hero Academia. I think that's next season, though.
I want to say yes.
I think it is. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, do you want to get into some lyrics?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's hear what it's about.
My computer is being really dumb, so if it switches back to Japanese on me, I'm going to kill a bitch.
Well, watch out, bitches.
Okay. So this one, the lyrics are... they're just kind of there.
They're
the
just
last,
there?
The very last line is the one that, like, really comes up with it. It's with my peace sign up when I say goodbye, write a story of a hero. Which, I mean, is essentially all that this is. It's the story of how he became the greatest hero.
Yeah, this is like the How I Met Your Mother version of...
Indeed.
Superheroes.
So, I mean, there's, like... I hear a voice calling, telling me to risk it, asking if I have been going the distance, singing with a passion that I cannot deny. My eyes are swollen with the tears that I've been crying, but to the rest of the world ever smiling, singing for the courage that I'm dying to show.
Well, it sounds... At least they did a decent job trying to be poetic.
Yes. Yeah.
That was one of the things that I complained about in the OST. Mm-hmm. And we'll get to that in a minute. The insert songs just weren't poetic. They're super fucking literal. So I appreciate at least an attempt at poetry here. That's not bad.
Yeah.
I can see what you mean by, like, it's not the most poetic thing either.
Yeah. It's kind of just like it is. It just is.
Generic and poetry.
It's a generic poetry for the show as a whole. I wouldn't necessarily compare it to season two and what they're going through. I wouldn't necessarily say it's anything that just screams at me like, this is a fucking great
song.
Well,
it's certainly not what, in my opinion, Izuku's going through in season two.
No, I don't think so.
It could be one of the other characters.
I think it might even be what they're, like, striving for.
That could be too.
You know, maybe not about anybody quite yet, but it's, you know, with my peace sign up, when I say goodbye, write a story of a hero. So it's like, you know, they're all going off onto their own journeys and... To try
that's
to
true.
Get to being a hero.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if that's reaching to fit, but I'm going to roll with it. Because I think the song fits. The lyrics fit. Everything about the song fits.
Even if it was like minor cookie cutter?
Even if it was cookie cutter, it still fits. It still goes along with the show. It's not like...
I wasn't blown away.
Yeah, it's not
it's not mediocre either.
Yeah, it's not like Baby Metal is doing the intro. Would I think Baby Metal would work here? No, probably not.
No.
So I really feel like it fits. I'm going to say it fits.
We'll give it a yes.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, that's it for intro one. Let's get to, or I'm sorry, intro two. Let's get to the second outro. This one... is Dakara Hitori Janai. Therefore, I Am Not Alone by Little Glee Monster. Emily loves this fucking song. I love the band name. It was released as a single in 2017 and later on the album Juice. It peaked at number 3 on the Oricon and the album went gold.
Goddamn animals.
Goddamn fucking animals over here. Hell yeah. Little Glee Monster formed in 2013 and debuted in 2014 while they were still teenagers.
Yeah, like I'm talking like 14, 15.
14, 15 teenagers. Like, freshmen in high school?
Like these kids were born in 1998.
Freshmen in fucking high school. Holy shit.
Yeah.
That would be if they debuted in 2014. Holy shit.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's 15, pretty crazy.
16 years old.
And then they debuted a year later. Like, they were that good that they were like, fuck it, let's go big.
Wow. Man, what do you Japanese people put in your water over there? I want some. Hook me up with some success. In 2017, Little Glee Monster, they were the support act for Ariana Grande and Earth, Wind, and Fire. And then in December, they released a song in collaboration with Pentatonix. That's fucking badass.
I know.
That's huge.
They just debuted.
That's amazing.
Like, not that long ago.
Super fucking impressive. Nice. Okay. Well, they just released an album in January of 2021 called Gradati. What is that?
Gradation.
Gradation with a weird infinity sign.
Yeah.
Instead of an O.
Believe me, cool. I wanted to say graduation so many times.
Gradation.
Gradation.
Little Glee Monster is also featured in Boruto, Pokemon XY, and Mix, which is a baseball anime. Cool. Well, are you guys ready to listen to the song?
Let's do it.
By you guys, I mean Emily, essentially.
I'm the only one here to respond.
She's the only one there to respond to me. Here we go. This one is outro number 2. Oh, yeah. 3-part harmony. Here we go. It's a little...
The whoa, whoa, whoa,
it's got
get
some,
me.
It's got some pretty cheese factor pop.
It's the whoa, whoa, whoa that get me. Sure.
But it's arranged well. The screams pop. No wonder it went number 3.
And by a super trendy band, too.
Yeah. Cool little breakdown section. I guess you could call this a bridge. I'm not really sure. Turn around. Very predictable. Everything about the song is pretty predictable. There's your chorus. More 3-part harmonies. I love the build, though. It's not a bad pop song. Cool. Yeah. Not bad.
Yeah.
I know Emily likes this song.
I don't know why. I usually don't like the really, like, super cheesy pop songs, but it's just, I don't know.
It's upbeat and, like, feel good.
Yeah. I like the 3-part harmonies, too. I don't know. It is what it is.
Yeah.
I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to talk about it.
For where we are in this... I think it fits.
I think it does, too.
I think some of the things that I have to remember about analyzing music for anime is not just, I mean, my own biases obviously come up. That's just how I'm born.
They somehow count.
But I got to think of the characters, where they're at in their life, like in adolescence, mm-hmm. and the story. And how it builds and progresses. So I think that the cheese is somewhat important in here. I don't like it on everything.
Yeah.
But at least this outro, I think it was a great decision to go with.
Yeah. And also this season has a lot of character development.
Yeah.
A lot of character development. You're learning about more of the characters in the 1A class. You're learning about the other heroes and like where they come from and
yep.
the villains and things like that. So, you know,
and teamwork and how,
yeah,
like,
you know, there's a lot of different things.
How the characters behave with each other.
Yeah.
And get along. So, yeah, no, I think as far as, like I said before, just Cheese Factor, I don't really like all the time. And I think this anime needs it, though.
Yeah.
From where, for what part, like in of the part of the story, excuse me, that we're in.
Yeah.
So, yeah, cool. Let's get into some lyrics.
Yeah. So one lyric that really stuck out to me that I was like, yeah, okay, this makes sense. I have to keep running if I want to get closer to my dreams. That's like the main theme of like,
everybody.
You know, everybody. Everybody working here. The first line is, I'm stuck against a headwind. Why does this only happen to me? Back then, I hated empty words of encouragement. We won't find any answers only looking up at the sky. Now is the time to prove that we're alive here and now. Which they time and time again prove, you know, that they're alive.
Definitely.
Somehow they keep
surviving.
They keep getting back up.
Yeah.
Yeah, the last line is, we won't run away anymore. The lyrics fit absolutely. It's very much like a song for motivation and getting through the adolescent thoughts and the childhood memories.
Well, I think it's ironic that they put, we won't run away anymore, except for like the training camp, the final exam, the practicals that they did. One of the goals was to like either capture or run away.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a lot of them chose to run away.
Run away. It was easier.
Yep.
Especially when they were against All Might.
Yeah. I mean, that was the only one that they didn't really, they fought back to run away.
Yeah.
You can't really capture All Might.
Well,
unless,
sometimes you have to know when to back away from a fight too. You know,
I know. That was the whole point of it.
That was the whole point.
That was the whole point of it. I think that they probably had opportunities to capture All Might.
I'm sure.
They could have thrown him off. He's a softie, so.
Oh, yeah. And he loves little Izuku.
Yeah. And Bakugo. He loves them both.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think, what do you think, Emily? Does it fit?
Yeah, I think it fits.
I think it fits,
it's
too.
It's the perfect vibe for ending an episode, especially when you got those goddamn villains showing up causing havoc at the very end.
Uh-huh.
You're like, okay, yeah, take a breath of deep, fresh air. You know, we're getting there.
Yeah.
We're becoming heroes.
Yes. All right. Well, that's two yeses so far.
Yeah.
Intro and outro, two. Well, let's get on to the third intro and third outro. I know Emily's been waiting for the third outro.
I have been. So, if you didn't notice from our Instagram.
Let's take it into the third intro, Emily.
All right. So we've got Sora ni Uteba, If You Sing to the Sky, by Amazarashi. Like a Maserati. That's Amazarashi.
You weirdo.
That's all I thought of when I was saying it and trying to practice my words today or the other day. All right, so this song was released in 2017 as their fourth single and later on the album Please Be Patient With Me. Shiho Toshi no Momento Mori.
That's not so bad.
Yeah.
That was an easy one to say.
Shiho Toshi.
We've had worse or harder words to say, that's for sure.
I know. So it peaked at number 13 on the Oricon. However, it did get to number 7 on the Japan Billboard charts, which I find kind of interesting because usually those go hand in hand.
Usually. I don't really know. I guess Oricon is all about sales and Billboard charts could be...
popularity.
Yeah, maybe radio. I don't really know
yeah,
how they,
I don't really
what
know.
They base their shit off of. I should know, but I don't right now.
Fair enough. All right, so Amazarashi. Formed in 2007. They were originally called the Star Issue. And I believe from what I read, it was because they wanted to project their music into the universe. So Star Issue, which kind of resonates with what I'm about to say, because in 2011, they had their first live performance where they performed behind a screen that lyrics were projected onto and have performed the same way ever since for all of their live sets. They are very Daft Punk-ish in a way that they are not seen. Their energy is not seen.
That's so weird, though. I would want to watch, I mean, unless there's silhouettes of them playing on the screen, I would dislike going to a live show
where
I don't get to watch.
Right, where you can't watch them, you know? I feel
I understand the mystery, but... maybe once. I don't know. So, pull away the screen for a little bit. I haven't seen any of their live shows, though, so I don't know for sure.
So the purpose was to transmit the message of the songs properly. That's what the lead singer wanted. However, I am a little bit... I think it's because he has a lot of social anxiety. Like, anytime they had, like, meetups with other people, like, they were like, oh, God, we got to get out of here. Like, I can't do this. So... I feel like it's probably more of like a social anxiety thing, which is exactly how I would prefer to perform, especially at first.
Behind the screen?
Probably not in the end, but like when I'd be first starting, like getting adjusted to everything. I've only played with like-minded instruments around me and not really a whole like ginormous audience.
Oh, man. I love a big audience.
And besides, if I played a whole set that was more than an hour and a half, which is typically what symphony performances are, I would run out of breath because I fucking hold my breath whenever I perform solos.
You hold your breath?
Yeah. My grandmother has a video of me in high school when I was doing a solo on the spring Vivaldi. And she said, she's like, Emily, you can see it in the fucking video. Like, you literally took a breath in when you started and you didn't breathe until the very end and you let out a huge breath.
You're crazy, woman. See, I'm the total opposite. I like relish that shit. I mean, unless I'm having a really bad show, but usually,
yeah, I
if
know
everybody's
Garrett,
having a good time.
I know that you like get off on that shit.
I don't
Not
get
all of
off
us
on
do.
It, but I want that show that like people are coming up to the stage and fucking pouring beers in my mouth. You
yeah.
Know?
Uh-huh.
I love that shit.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Anyways, let's get back to
Don't judge
Masurashi.
Me.
I am.
You're so judgy.
Oh, you know why.
Shut up.
It's featured in Tokyo Ghoul, second season, my favorite season. Actually, that's not true. I like both of the seasons. I just wish they hadn't fucked it up.
Yeah, they did fuck it up a little bit. But that's not what we're here for.
Dororo and Ranpo Kitan, Game of Laplace.
I think that's Dororo.
Dororo?
Dororo.
I would probably still have a hard time saying it. I'd probably say too many rows are not enough.
Do-ro-ro-ro-ro. Do-do-do-ro-ro.
All right, guys, let's listen to
yep,
it. We rambled for you.
Fuck, we're stupid. This one's got a great intro. That those vocals grab you right away.
Yeah, they do.
Love the punky sounding guitars. Drop out. Little fill. Cool. It's a nice turnaround into the verse.
I love those female vocals behind.
Speed it up a little bit. This is written really well. And it sounds like the harmonies slowed down, but the drums didn't. They kept the pace. And they open it back up again. Bring back the guitar. A re-intro here. Rehook. Sick. Love the outro too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was written very well. I like the music. I think it definitely like overall right now it fits. Animation was great. Yeah. Lyric time.
Lyric time.
La 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 lyric time. Let's get it.
All right. So this one is more like it almost seems like they're accepting that shit's going to go down. So we've got Eternity in Flight, I'm Singing to the Sky, Regrets Are Unavoidable, It's Fate, A Future We Achieve with All Our Might, So Continue to Fight. I've paddled through a sea of tears, much time has passed by, goodbye, I must move forward, no matter what I lose in the process. My future is too bright to give up on, so I'll keep fighting on.
Okay. It sounds like a lot of people. Yeah. Same feeling for
these
everybody.
These intros and outros are very like generalized, at least until the last and the last outro we're about to cover.
The one that we're about to do.
Yeah.
I think that it fits the vibe. That's the thing. Like, this is a very well arranged song. Definitely sounds formulated. Formulated well.
Yeah.
So it's like a very fancy cookie cutter.
Yeah.
It was done well. The production's done really well. They hired great performers, a great band to do it. I like the song. And I think it fits.
I think it fits.
There's, like we said on the other ones, it was just, even though it's cookie cutter, doesn't mean that it's bad. Sometimes it's an easy route to go.
Yeah.
That you know is going to work. Just fucking pull out the cookie cutters.
It's true. Especially if somebody calls and's like, hey, I need you to write a song for this anime. And it's like, oh, well, I've got like a record I'm trying to like put out.
Yeah.
You know?
So, yeah, I think it fits. Check it
off.
I got
it. Yep, that's it. It fits.
All right. Now on to another one of Emily's favorites.
Yeah.
The third outro. Date Atashi no Hero, Still My Hero by Lisa.
Our favorite.
Yes. Fuck yeah. I'm so glad Lisa came back around.
Old Risa Orabe.
That's right.
So cute.
So cute. This song was released in 2017 as her 12th single and never released on a full-length album. It peaked at number 7 on the Oricon. That's about right.
Mm-hmm.
When Lisa wrote the song, she thought about what it would be like if Izuku Midoriya were to sing his honest feelings to Kachan. And that is a great way of writing a song. She put some thought into
this. She put some thought into it.
Way to go, Lisa. Basically, this song is dedicated to Bakugo from Midoriya. There you go, you ship fanatics.
You ship fanatics.
You ship fiends. That's pretty much, Lisa's like, I want to ship them off too.
Yeah, yeah.
This is it. This is the song.
This is it. We're going to get you together.
And as far as the artist Lisa goes, there is literally a whole episode dedicated to her and her many achievements. We love her so fucking much. She was our first and only artist spotlight so far. We're excited to hear her in the next or the upcoming Demon Slayer movie. And
that hasn't come to America yet, god damn it.
Who the fuck knows? We haven't gotten an exact date, have we?
I think we might have, but actually I think it would just have late April.
Yeah, it was one of those things that it gave us a date and then changed it because it got delayed. Man, well, yeah, we don't need to do, if you guys need any credentials on Lisa, head over to like, what is that, episode 3?
Yeah.
It's like 2 or 3?
It's up there. It's one of our earlier episodes.
Maybe just it's even 2.
Go check it out.
It's a very short one. And if you want to learn a lot about Lisa,
we gave you a whole spread.
That is for sure. All right, let's take a listen to the song.
Let's listen to it.
Date Atashi no Hero. Let's go. I love this. There's a cool guitar lick coming in. It just gets so raunchy for a second. Right here. Meow. I love that.
That's his favorite part.
I love that part. It's like it throws me off every time. The bass line is so ornate. The guitars are fucking great. The guitar licks are sick. And that synth. Lisa sometimes writes shit that's a little too hard for anime, especially like this. And they threw in like a little cheesy synth. Like, yeah. Let's sprinkle some cheese on it so it takes away from the heftiness.
From the heaviness that Lisa gives you.
I hear some Coheed and Cambria in this song too. Just a little bit.
Okay.
And then some pop punk. Yeah, that's a great song. That's a fucking great song.
So I have a fun fact about the animation.
What is your fun fact?
My fun fact is, if you are at home on your computer or your smartphone watching these videos that we have put on our playlist, there is a scene in the ending sequence where it shows Kachan riding on a red dragon, and that is said to have been in, I think it's chapter 43 of one of the light novels, that it's Kirishima, and because he actually turns out to be half human, half dragon.
He is.
Yeah.
So you think that dragon lady's like related to him?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't think so.
I doubt it.
I don't think so.
I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah, no. I think you're barking up the wrong tree there.
Yeah, probably. That is a fun fact.
That's a fun fact, guys. Fun facts.
Fun facts.
All right. Let's get into some lyrics.
Definitely give me the lyrics because you still haven't read them to me about how Emily always reads the lyrics live in front of me. I'm blind reacting essentially to these lyrics. So it is exciting to hear how Lisa thought of Bakugo's and Midoriya's relationship.
You know, she definitely wrote this for him, like for sure. So I'm going to give you like a good chunk of these lyrics because it's essentially a love letter. It's like
It's a love letter, to a friend.
It's a love letter to a friend. Yeah. Gotcha. She's not really like shipping them. It's more or less like
I said relationship, but I meant friendship.
Yeah. No, it's kind of like how he did for Todoroki, Izuku during the battle. Okay. And he kind of was like, you can do better than this. Like, you got this. Like, this is like all about keeping him, like giving him confidence and stuff like that.
Okay.
So the first line is, giving up is foreign to you, but there are empty, miserable days too. I want to see each flash of endeavor as if it were once in a lifetime, however many times I meet them. One lifetime is solitary, but together there's abundance. To a nothing like me, you gave meaning. That's almighty strength. Like, she just like threw in a whole bunch of like My Hero Academia references. Endeavor, almighty strength.
That's great. See, now that's written with some effort and poetry. It's not overly literal.
Yeah. Hooray, hooray. I'm made to say it so often. What's with that ability? Always stand and face it. You give me courage. Hooray, hooray. Every little thing is screaming. When I see those eyes, I can run too. Let's shred that grand finale. Shall we go on an adventure? Are we fine like this? Agonizing, tantalizing, and isn't indecision there too? Although I'm as awkward as if I'd been alone for 1,000 years, I want to try and look at the goal that's only yours and mine. And so I'm going to go down to the...
And I have to give a little annotation there. Yeah. It almost would feel like you're alone for 1,000 years when you're the only person that you know without a quirk.
Without a quirk, yeah. And he's watched Kachan with his quirk growing up his entire life.
And when he was ready to get his, never came.
Never
Doctor's
came.
Doctor's like, you don't have it.
Yeah. So then it skips over another hooray, hooray section. The mistakes that were made, the self you were unable to love, if you're able to embrace them, it's almighty strength. Touching, not touching, but I get that kind of power. The wall in front of our eyes, let's laugh when we're beyond it. And the last line is, because you're my hero.
Aww. In a way, kinda.
Yeah. I mean, that's who he looked up to growing up because
at least
he was
the
cool.
Only buddy that,
he was a cool kid.
That, I mean, they were like, they were best friends, even though Bakugo was a fucking asshole to him all the time. So, and he gave him the nickname Useless.
Yeah. It's so sad.
Man. Well, that's awesome that he kept his cool. And essentially Bakugo is like, he wanted to be like All Might his whole life, but he really also wanted to be like Bakugo. He wanted to be able to help him.
Yeah. I think that's his downfall. He always wants to help everybody.
That's not a downfall.
In a way, like he lost that battle with Todoroki, he could have won. But
in his condition, if he would have won, he would have injured himself really, really
bad. Yeah, probably.
He probably would have.
His
hand would have been way worse.
He would have been like, All Might said that this was my time to come to the public eye and say, I am here.
But he did. He did come to the public eye and say, I am here. He got first on the obstacle.
Yeah, on the obstacle.
On the obstacle course.
But he didn't. He like barely used his quirk. Barely.
He didn't need to use it as quirk. He didn't use it at all.
Oh,
actually.
Yeah, that's right. Because he used the bombs and the trencher.
He didn't use it at all. So just him by himself, his own smart and wits, got through the entire obstacle course in first place. Beat everybody.
Okay.
That's what's important. Because oh. now he's developing his power that you know is already All Might's power. So he's smarter than All Might, in my opinion. Much smarter.
Well, yeah. He's
much, much, much smarter.
Have you seen him murmur?
Yeah, he's constantly murmuring about shit.
Constantly murmuring about shit.
Fucking murmur. Murmur.
All right, what do you think, Garrett? What do you think?
Fuck yeah, Fitz. It's the best one that fits so far. We got 4 for 4 in this season.
We sure did.
3 cookie cutters, pretty much. And then one amazing one that yeah. definitely fits. It gets a double cha-ching.
I know.
I'm going to give it 2.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Because it was done well. That is an A+. That is an A fucking plus outro.
Hell yeah.
Do we get higher than A+? I know in Japan they have S class, but...
That's true.
I haven't picked anything that's like, I think I may need to wait till we get to like episode 50. We do 50 of them. We have a bunch of content
and then
to search through.
We can pick through all of the stuff that we've done in our whole first yeah. year. And then we just
we
like,
can determine if there's
S-class.
Any if there's any S class.
S class from season one.
Probably, that's a great idea.
Probably ideas that we shouldn't like give the audience. But
nah,
here we
it.
Are. We're brainstorming. You yeah. have you know our brains.
We can brainstorm on the spot, right?
Sure.
That's the idea. Let's get into the OST then. We're done.
Yeah.
With the
intros and outros.
Intros
yeah.
and outros.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get into OST. OST 2 was released September of 2017. It is 46 tracks total, 2 discs. Each with 23 songs, composer Yuki Hayashi back at it again with some fun track titles, too. Let's get into our notes.
Yes, let's do it.
Let's fucking do it. I got a lot to say about this. There's 4 pages worth of notes on this motherfucker. That and there's a couple of negatives, not a whole lot. And I don't think it takes away from, it would take it away from being an S class.
Yeah.
I thought about that, too, about this. What could be S class? Is this one considered S class? And no, I don't think it is. I think it's an A.
Yeah, I definitely didn't star as many as I did on the first OST.
I actually starred 1 as a con, as something not to do that I really
was
thought
it the insert
away.
Song?
It was the insert song, actually.
I think I said the same thing. Was it the one that? The My Hero Academia one?
Yeah, so they did an insert song. Why did I just close my notebook? They did an insert song that brought back, it's essentially the My Hero Academia theme, the last song on OST 1, and they brought it back with lyrics. And it was kind of rap lyrics, but the lyrics were way, way too fucking literal. And it just made it cheesy. Like, and
you know,
I mean literal about the anime and the moment that was happening right then. It was not good. It was not done well. It took away from the song, from the badassery of the song.
Yeah, and you
that
know...
That was on disc 2, though.
That was on disc 2. And it was called Just Another Hero.
Yes.
So, and it was like, oh, this is just another song.
This is, yeah.
So, I felt the same vibes. And the guy who sings it, Steve McNair... when I looked him up, he's very much an electronic like music producer. So, I mean, it kind of makes sense that that's the style that they went for. But the lyrics are super simple and like they're like Garrett said before, they are not poetic. They are not anything worthy of putting on over that track. Like
shouldn't have done it.
That is not OK. You don't ruin the most famous track on your OST and put those kind of lyrics over the top of it.
Yeah, I really did not like that song or what they did to it.
I would have even added like a female vocalist in the back going like doing some oohs or something behind it, like making it powerful, kind of like
chants,
a Mika Kobayashi on Attack on Titan kind
of thing.
Or even
some of the other songs that they
yeah.
did. They had like the chanting background vocals,
if you
the
want,
choir.
If you want to put some vocals on it, put some vocals on it, but don't do that. Don't do that.
Yeah, I didn't like that. I guess since we're already starting with cons, let's
get
the cons out of the way. Because this really is an A, if not A plus OST. I really liked the score as a whole. I think there's a couple of songs that I'm like, this is what I would teach in a school.
Yeah.
This is what I would teach in a class about composing. It was done really, really well. But Con number two, I don't think at least disc one was put together as well as OST one. OST one was a great production start to finish as an album. But I think that disc two was put together a lot better than disc one.
So much better. Like the transitions, like I even highlighted, I was like, show the transition between tracks 9 and 10 on the second disc, because that's a perfect example of like a great transition.
Oh, there was a bunch. There was like pretty much song one to song five.
Yeah.
It was all great transitions.
Yeah.
And it happened again after that. There was a couple of them that the transitions couldn't have been perfect, but they chose the right spot to put the songs.
Mm-hmm. And
I think that's because, so OST 1 had, like it followed the season start to finish and you knew exactly what scenes were happening when you were listening to the music.
Right.
I think that they did that really well with disc 2 because they were using disc 2 to describe the battles in Hosa City.
Yeah.
And the battle with Stain and the Nomus and stuff like that. When it really got serious. All the internships. That's where disc two is. Disc one was kind of the sports festival.
Yeah.
And because of that, the sports festival was a bit all over the place. I mean, I think they could have made it a little more cohesive. But they had some comedy, they had some serious moments, and they had some character development. So I think it was a little more all over the place, and it couldn't have been put together as well. That could have made it a little different. I'm sure they could have done it a little bit better, but just disc two was put together much better than disc
one was. Yeah, no, I completely agree. And may I also say that how come the villains have the best songs?
Yeah, they do.
There's like so much more effort put into the villain songs, whether it's instrumentation, whether it's phrasing, whether it's dynamics or
tempo.
I don't think that the heroes.
Okay, so the villains definitely have better songs than the heroes, but I don't think they have the best songs. I think some of the best songs were describing the emotions and the situations.
Right, because of dealing with the villains.
No, not the one I just starred. The one I was thinking of was Forever Number Two.
Oh, that song was.
That was the one that we were talking about, the symbolism and stuff.
Yeah.
So I think one song that's really unique was Obstacle Course on disc one.
Oh, I started that one.
Yeah, me too. That one was super. That was just all over the place. That had so much going on.
I liked my. My thing. I said Scott meets Great Pretender, meets Foo Fighters, and then falls in love with a seductive Latin Cajun fellow, and then we got that.
Mm-hmm. I was very Scott-like. Love it. Bass guitar and horns definitely fits the obstacle course. Feels like a race. Love the transition to acoustic guitar. Kind of Latin. Tons of worldly flavors in this track. Sick guitar solo and kind of like a rock and roll New Orleans.
Yeah. I got that too.
There was a lot going on in that one. The one that I'm definitely going to play from disc one is Forever Number Two.
Okay.
That's the one I would use in a classroom setting.
Yeah.
This song was done. This is perfect. This is an S-class piece.
I liked the dark tone that I got from that.
Yeah.
It was super dark, but like also lively enough to be like, okay, I can keep up with this.
Yes. Now, I wrote some notes at the top of my page that are like overall notes, and I was like perfect use of musical symbolism. I love how the pieces are sometimes composed with dialogue or voice acting in mind. The voices often sound like they're a part of the score itself.
Okay.
I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, well, that was.
Forever Number Two, I'm going to give you my description, and then we'll play it here. When it started, actually right before it started, just the title of it, Forever Number Two, I couldn't tell if it was about Bakugo or Endeavor. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, we can't really tell.
And I think that after listening to it, it's Endeavor. I think we did figure that out. You'll hear this when we start to play this track. It uses a lot of piano and pads that are super wet with reverb. So it makes them sound really far away. And by doing that, the melody that they use, the chord progression that they use, and by using the wet reverb, it makes it a very symbolic piece to kind of describe the distance, because it sounds so far away. That's how far away number one is from number two. That's how far away you still are from being number one. Yeah. So I think that was it gave the distance emotion, which I thought was cool. The big sub hits and the percussion, that rock your subwoofers, that kind of feels like a big punch to the gut and your ego.
Yeah.
The lack of notes and the pitch swells that they use really adds to the frustration and confusion. Why can't I get to number one? What the fuck do I need to do different? Why am I not as successful as this person? Why do they keep growing at such a rapid pace?
Yeah.
Why am I not getting the opportunity to shine like they do? Why can't I be number one? That all that frustration and confusion and stuff, this song it was perfect. It was perfect. They did it amazingly.
Getting the word perfect out of Gary.
It was perfect. All right, so here is Forever number two.
This was another one that sounded like Sawano.
Yes, it was very Sawano-esque.
There's a couple songs on here that I'm like, I started and I was like, for AOT vibes.
Yeah. It's almost as if trying to become number one is a feat so daunting, it feels like a villain.
Yeah.
Feels like a villain you can't beat. That's a very short song, too. We only got about 15 seconds left. It's definitely a music bed for developing some sort of hatred or loathing. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, no, that was a good song.
And such a short piece, but described the emotion, especially of the title,
mm-hmm.
beautifully. I would use that as a teaching point, talking point for anybody who's trying to learn composition and scoring and things like that. It was great. It was great. It's simple, but it captured the emotion perfectly.
Yeah. And, you know, another thing, I'm pretty sure we said it about the last one too, but this OST in itself had a lot of versatility.
Tons of versatility.
Because then you got to the middle of disc two, and this was how I wanted to show the transition between tracks 9 and 10, because 9 and 10... both have a kind of like a westerny, deserty feel to them. Like track 9 is The Era Is Hot, and it has like that fiddle.
On disc two,
yeah. You've got that fiddle, and it sounds really southern and even desertish.
And almost Middle Eastern.
Yeah.
It's like bluesy and Middle Eastern at the same time.
It was very strange.
That fiddle is almost like like gypsy jazz,
yes.
sort of fiddle.
Yeah, so I wanted to clarify that, because when I say Western, I'm thinking of like more Southern kind of things as well. But it wasn't completely embodied by what you hear in like The Devil Goes Down to Georgia type of thing.
I see what you mean by Western as far as instrumentation goes.
Yeah.
But the music theory behind it and the mode that was used was very either. I know this is two pretty different places, but. Like Tuscan and or Middle Eastern.
Yeah.
Like the vibe of it.
It was definitely a different vibe. And then so you come out of that and then you go into track 10, which is Predecessor's Sworn Friend. And then you have like kind of another, like you get this almost like a fusion of a symphonic and that like Middle Eastern feel to it as well. So then like you had you had like the chanting, which is like a huge power play, and then you've got those drums, the big drums in the string section.
Mm-hmm.
So I did love how this OST had a lot of versatility on it. And then you get to the villain songs, like, what was it?
Well, the villain songs are crazy.
Murderer's Eye.
I have to bring this up too. From track one to about track five, honestly.
On disc two?
Yeah, on disc two.
Yeah.
From track one to about track five. And then the transition between five and six wasn't like, it didn't catch my ear. But then you got track six to track seven, then to track eight. And those that group was done really well. And then you have 9 to 10 was done really well. All of those, it was just put together very, very intelligently, like with purpose.
Yeah, the only con that I have with those tracks from one to essentially 10, like halfway, like up to the halfway point of disc two,
uh-huh,
is that they reuse the same motif within two songs.
No, they actually do it in three songs.
Is it three?
Uh-huh. So it's the motif starts in number one, track one.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And they actually reused it for track one, because that's a motif from the first OST,
right,
which I forgot to fucking look up before we
hopped
on this and started recording. But that is, maybe I'll just put it in the notes or something. That is a motif from OST one. I'll find that, put that in the notes. And it starts on track one, on disc two, From Me to You. It is really somber, but it almost
and it
feels,
never resolved.
It's, well, it almost feels like it's an apology from All Might to Izuku.
Yeah.
Where he's apologizing for giving him this super heavy burden that comes with this amazing power.
Because
he never
power.
Told him when he gave him the power that, oh yeah, you're going to have to fight the biggest villain of all time,
yeah,
who actually made this power. So I feel like he's apologizing for not telling him that. And giving him that burden,
yeah,
that's a very heavy burden. You got to save the world now, kid. Have
yeah.
fun. Also,
in
I'm
your
dying.
Little tiny body.
Also, I'm dying, and I can't help you forever. So they did bring back, they brought back the motif in the second half of the piece from OST 1. It gives them that feeling of like, it's almost Izuku's response. It feels like there is still hope. And I am so grateful for this power. I've always wanted to be a hero and have a quirk. I won't let you down.
Yeah, well, they kind of fucked up on the transition from that to go into fucking Murderer's Eye.
Yeah, so the transition into Murderer's Eye, it was like the perfect, I'm going to use the word again, juxtaposition.
Yeah.
Where it is such a contrast, because
you're like,
this is the power. This is the power that I gave you. I'm so sorry. It's from me to you. Also, this is what you're up against.
This is what you're dealing with.
You're up against the Murderer's Eye. It's actually, and you're up against the villain who's worse than what this fucking song sounds like. God damn, that song was terrifying.
Yeah.
That song was terrifying. Track two, disc two. Go listen to that one.
Yeah. And I started that one, but I feel like there's a better song that I would love to represent the villains more than that one.
Okay.
And I'm going to have to find it.
But they did a great job transitioning from track two to track three.
No, they did. They did.
That one is another, that one's called Master Criminal. It kind of chills you out. And then the transition from track three to track four, Self-Analysis. Self-Analysis sounds a very internal monologue.
Yes.
It's like you have these two intense first tracks that describe the contrasting powers. And then you have Master Criminal and Self-Analysis, which is like the new criminals, the new generation of criminal and the new generation of hero.
Right.
Analyzing themselves.
Right. And I even put there was a lot of tension being represented with the synthesizer. And you know that the characters are thinking about their weaknesses. And then that motif comes back around to remind them that they're fucking training hard and they have to buck it up.
And it connects you to the previous two songs.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they have the song number five, Surpassing You.
Which was a very beautiful and powerful piece.
It was great, but it described a task that feels super daunting but necessary, impossible yet mandatory. Very sad about the process that has to happen. Because we don't want it to, you know? He's gonna have to overtake All Might, and he does not want to do that.
Yeah.
The female vocals are a great touch. They almost calm you down in a way. So I did like that. And then track six, Supportive Heart.
Same fucking motif, the motif the piano.
Again. The motif again. It's just the piano version of the motif.
Yeah. It was a pretty version though. It's
yeah.
Super heartfelt. It wasn't anything special, but it was heartfelt. You could, that's the thing about having I think later on in disc two, you also had it was a piano and string section. And it's like, yeah, this is heartfelt. Those are the instruments you use to feel in your feels.
Yeah. Those are heart strings.
Heart strings. God
damn. Fucking heart strings. Yeah, so they use that motif again. And then you have kind of the out of that whole series of emotions
mm-hmm.
from the previous songs up into track seven, which is called Resting Symbol of Peace. That one feels to me like a serious, something that happens after a super serious moment, like going home after a funeral.
Yeah, like somber.
You know? It's somber. It's like you just experienced something super sad, and now this is the aftermath of the storm. You're with your own thoughts. Like you have maybe sad emotions still in your heart, but you're remembering happy things too. I thought that was an interesting piece to have. And it's, so that one's called Resting Symbol of Peace. That one's pretty short and out of the blue. You're like, okay, it doesn't even give you a moment to really feel that. You feel that for a second. You're like, damn, that was a super intense moment of sadness that I just experienced.
Here we go.
Now I'm terrified because although it says resting symbol of peace, the minute that the symbol is resting, you have the song Serious Shiver, which is fucking terrifying.
Yeah, that was some real, like, you even got those psycho vibes. It was like the
super psycho. It was nuts. You had is that the one with the children's screams too? There was one that was like that.
I think that might have been It Sounds Scary at Midnight, which I want to play because that had every song sound sample that you could think of to make that song sound uber creepy.
Yeah, yes, we'll play that one in just a second. I have one more thing to say about Serious Shiver. Just one more thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of a thought of inspiration for me with the way they have these these little plucking noises for percussion and stuff that are, they're creepy sounding, one, and two, they don't really have notes. It's almost percussive mm-hmm. plucking, but they bleed it into with the same rhythm. They give it notes and they use a different instrument for it. So it was a really cool transition into an arpeggiated harmony that sat underneath. I really liked that. And it sets you up for an arpeggiation that doesn't sound too upfront. So it's not the only part of the melody that you're hearing. There's other melody happening, and that's just supporting the melody.
You know, I wrote that a lot. It was like,
And it does have a curdling scream on this song. I wrote
does
that
it?
There. Yeah.
Okay.
And they fucked it up with effects.
Okay.
But yeah, go ahead.
Is that they like, they have a bunch of running melodies all at the same time.
Yeah.
And I like how they blend them well together. Like there's one track where it's like a string section like playing, and then the horns and the strings and this other instrument are kind of playing similar, but they're a little bit different on like rhythm. But then you have this one string section that's just playing like a very fast, almost like a tremolo type thing.
There's lots of harmony. It's like they use the same chord, but they open it up in different ways and use different
voicings and stuff.
Yeah. I thought it was cool how they open it up. And when I say opening up a chord, for those of you guys that aren't musicians, that's like, imagine somebody strumming all six strings of the guitar when they're holding out a chord. And then imagine somebody playing each string individually in a pattern that they choose. It doesn't matter what the pattern is, but you're opening the notes of the chord instead of strumming all of them at the same time. So, yes, let's play, what was it called? Something at Midnight?
It Sounds Scary at Midnight. It's on disc one, track 17.
Disc one, track 17. We're going back to disc one here. This one is right here. It's Scary at Midnight. Here it is. Oh, and the clicking. Yeah. I forgot about that. The TikTok. The creepy kids.
Creepy kids. They bring about Ring Around the Rosie.
Oh, yeah. That was this one, too.
Yeah.
And you hear they fuck up the samples with effects, distortion and EQ and shit. Ring Around the Rosie.
Sounds like an old record player that's been left alone for a long time with a lot of distortion.
I like how they play two clashing melodies. You have Ring Around the Rosie. And you have something else. It's like a kid's song, but it's creepier.
And I like how they panned it, too, to where it bounces between both of your ears.
Mm-hmm. They do a lot of the panning for the sweeps, too.
Mm-hmm.
Sending it from one side to the other slowly or speeding it up as it pitches. The ticking clock is cool how they, with each tick, it's in one side or the other side of the speakers.
But kind of behind you?
Yeah.
Jiraiya's theme coming in.
Jiraiya's theme. Yes. No, they actually, speaking of that, that's a good segue into one of the other things that surprised me. There was a lot more use of the traditional Japanese instruments and traditional Japanese melodies, too.
Yeah.
I noticed a lot of that for some of the battle songs. The Wodaiko drums and the shamisen. Actually, no, it was the shakuhachi.
Mm-hmm.
They used that and incorporated that. And even one song, they took it a step further and threw in some fucking didgeridoos.
Oh, yeah. Was that also the one that had the bamboo flute on it, too?
Yeah, the shakuhachi.
The shakuhachi,
mm-hmm. Yeah, they used the shakuhachi in a couple different songs. Not a whole lot. I think it's just two, maybe three. And then that one has the didgeridoo. But I thought that was cool.
I hope everybody knows what a didgeridoo sounds like.
You would know. You want me to pull it up?
Yeah, pull it up.
Let me pull up a didgeridoo.
We've pulled up all the other instruments for them before, and I'm glad that I said bamboo flute instead of shakuhachi because now it's a good reminder.
Yeah, let me see if I can find this didgeridoo. Did you have any other notes about the score?
About the score?
Mm-hmm.
Not anything else that really came, like, that really stood out. I felt a lot of meh about some of the songs. Like, I even just wrote meh. Like, I had nothing to say about them.
Meh?
I just wrote meh.
This traditional didgeridoo rhythms by Lewis Burns. That looks like a good video.
Yeah, let's do it.
Here's what it is. And I will add that to the playlist right now. Oh, can't. Never mind. I'll do it in a minute.
All right. I think we've got enough didgeridoo, guys.
20 seconds of didgeridoo is plenty for you to recognize what that sound is.
That was more for my pleasure than anything else. And I always think of letters.
But yeah, they threw that motherfucker on the track. Were you about to say you think of Dewey Cox? Walk
no,
hard?
No. I was going to say I think of Letterkenny.
Oh.
Because of the pastor playing the didgeridoo. They're playing the didgeridoos.
I always think of Dewey Cox, Walk Hard.
Yeah.
That one, that one's fucking hilarious. He's on a bunch of acid, and he's like, I need more didgeridoos. 50,000 didgeridoos.
50,000 didgeridoos.
Yes. That goat has more vocals on this track than I do. Yeah, that's a great movie. But not what we're talking about. Let's get back to the score.
Somehow we do this often.
Oh, yeah. A lot. There was one other thing that I didn't agree with. Where is it? Vengeance, that was a con.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even hear the desperation for vengeance in this one.
And I think after giving it quite a bit of thought, I was like, man, the title Vengeance really does not describe this piece well. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just an incorrect title rather than the song doesn't fit. Because I feel like where this song was, where this piece was it was Tenya confronting Stain.
Yeah.
And to me, right off the bat, I was like, intro doesn't sound very vengeful.
Nope.
Maybe Tenya. I wasn't sure. And then the more I listened to it, I was like, it really is more of a naive vengeance. It's a little too happy, too proud.
Lighthearted.
Yeah, it's too lighthearted. I love the modal mixture that they used in there. The sounds, it sounds like someone just let go of their vengeance, maybe. And the horn section was great, and it had some cool keys. So I think it was a bad title rather than a bad song.
Yeah. Something that I feel like I have to stand behind is that clearly it fit in the scene. Like it fit where it was. I had no idea. Normally if I hear something and while we're listening to it, like, oh, this doesn't really fit here. You know, we're like quick to notice that, especially when we're going back and listening to something the second time. So it fit the scene. So it's hard for me to say I don't think it represents vengeance, because if it came at that point where, you know, that was the only time of vengeance in the season.
Yeah, and I think it is a naive vengeance when I think of the dialogue that he said when he met Stain. He's like, you took down, he was a most excellent big brother.
Yeah.
You know, it's a naive vengeance. It's an adolescent vengeance.
Now, did I like this song standalone? Not really. Think that it standalone was vengeance? I don't really think so.
I think it captured the scene.
I think it captured the scene. And, but I feel like that's something that, like, you know, when we have cons about something, it doesn't mean that they didn't make it fit.
Yeah.
This is like a standalone. We are analyzing this score us apart from the anime and with the anime.
And every sense. They followed Vengeance, though, with something that definitely fit.
Oh, yeah.
Hero Killer. Super creepy. It has this very tribal-like beat at the beginning. But then they mess with it, like with EQ filters and shit. The guy sounds like he's hunting. Whatever this song is about, and you obviously know it's
about
Stain. But it sounds like it's a hunter. This is the song of a hunter stalking his prey. Guttural chanting and the samples that they use for the vocals were fucking killer.
Yeah, I liked the way they built it. Like,
yeah, they built it very well.
The way that it builds up and it swells, and then it's just like,
I will give this OST that it captured. In my opinion, it captured every scene, even the ones that I'm like, I didn't really like that song. I think it captured the scene really well. So he definitely played and performed, wrote and composed to the anime. He didn't do what he liked. I mean, maybe he did a lot of things that he liked. Yeah. I'm sure. But even if he didn't like something, I'm sure that he was like, no, it does need this. Yeah. It fits the scene. It was done very well. Which is why it gets an A. It gets an A, maybe an A+. I might even give it a whole A+. Not an S. It's an A+ OST with S-level songs. Some of them.
Okay.
Some of them. Towards the end of disc 2... I felt that it got a little too cookie cutter.
It did. Very much so.
Including the epic pieces. Trinity. Actually, really all of them. The Power of Endeavor, I thought was lame.
That was. And I was, you know, I was like, you know, you, with this song, the emotion that I feel toward Endeavor is probably there. Because it's like, do I love him? Do I hate him? Am I scared of him?
A little bit.
You know, a little bit.
He's still a hero.
Yeah, he's still a hero, but he's fucking scary.
Yeah, he's pretty menacing.
He's a scary dude. But, you know, I don't feel like it really captured how powerful he is.
It didn't. And I think...
And it's the power of
It started
of
out with this really, really slow build. And I was like, all right, I know that there needs to be a build. Endeavor comes on the scene like that. That's just how he enters, you know? There's got to be a little bit of a build there. I was like, okay, let me give it a chance. Let's wait for the drop.
Yeah, it never got there.
Build could have been way better. The drop was very lame. Mm-hmm. I hated the drop. I was like, this motherfucker's quirk is called Hellfire. His quirk is Hellfire. The song needs a very fiery fucking OST. That's what he needs. And I was like, this song, The Power of Endeavor, was very underwhelming. Even the guitar solo. I was like, the only counter to that, I counter my own thoughts sometimes, if you can't tell. I just like think about, you know, okay, maybe why could it have been different? Why was it chosen to be the other way? Maybe they have an argument against mine. Endeavor is a stoic badass. So in this scene, he really wasn't trying that hard.
Yeah.
He didn't need to show off his true power. And it was underwhelming as in like, I think it could have been more badass, sure. But we do see a lot of character development from Endeavor, especially into the fourth season. So I was like, maybe they didn't want to give too much right away. It was almost like, this is the power of Endeavor, but it happened so fast. You don't get a whole build. You don't get the epic drops because he's using, well, I don't know, fucking 10% of his power. He's barely working that hard.
Yeah.
So it could be that. Could be. Still think it could have been better.
Oh, it definitely could have been better. If you're going to label a song The Power of Endeavor and he is the number two hero, it's got to be more badass than that.
He just didn't show off his true power. And when I think of, that's what made me think of season four when he actually did show off.
I literally wrote season four.
Yeah.
I was like, because that was what I was like, you don't know if you should like him, hate him, be scared of him, especially after season four. Like, he was a fucking badass in that finale. And then you get into season five and he's laying there fireless on a hospital bed.
Yeah.
Oh, so sad.
But way to give the spoilers of the fifth.
Hey, fifth you guys season. Know what was going to happen.
This is spoiler city over here. I think that's pretty much all I had.
Yeah, that's all I got too.
There is one thing we have to tell you as far as the playlist goes.
Mm-hmm.
Track number 21 doesn't look like it's there. You actually won't be able to find the timestamp that the person who made the video. They have timestamps for every song. It's essentially one 2.5 hour long video with OST 1 and OST 2.
Just subtract a minute and 32 seconds from track 22 and you'll be at track 21.
Yeah, just go to the end. I do have a timestamp here. We did find it. It is 2 hours, 31 minutes in and 9 seconds, 2 hours, 31 minutes and 9 seconds in. The song is called The Threat Will Go. It happens right after, obviously, track 20. So if you click on track 20, listen all the way through, that's where track 21 is. I actually liked track 21.
I did too. I liked that violin section.
Yeah, I was like, it's very, very Hansy, Hans Zimmery.
Yeah.
The EQ sweeps into the guitar riffs were cool.
And that
super
vocalist
epic.
With her ethereal voice.
Yeah, definitely. It was an epic song. Definitely got my blood going.
And it ended very big, too.
Yes.
It was a super big ending.
Now, unfortunately, we do have to end with a bit of a con. Because the last two songs...
Oh, God.
Are just the most cheesy fucking songs I've ever heard. These are the two that I don't think belong... And it would bring it down. These are C minuses. These are bad songs.
Yeah,
these are bad.
They're not good, guys. Especially the last song. And you know, and I'm all about like getting creative about your versatility and stuff. But and even on track number 22, Forest Training Camp, it did get pretty towards the end, and it definitely had the symbolism of being like happy. I'm in the forest. I'm in wide open spaces. Confinement. You know, things like that. I did like that the symbolism was there for them being in the forest training camp.
Sure.
But it was still extra cheesy.
Yeah, I mean, I put cheese as fuck. That was the first thing I wrote. The vocals and the bass line especially really cheesy chord progression. Vibraphones are super cheesy.
It was
pop
the,
acoustic guitar strumming. That's super fucking cheesy.
The
Every
piano
arrangement
made that super, super cheesy.
I said, I honestly really don't like this track. I'm sure it fits the scene, but I feel it really takes away from the rest of the OST.
It does.
It
does.
Definitely takes away.
Then you get to track number 23.
And
that is
the
most
chance,
conflicted.
This is the chance. If you only listened through like track 21, you'd probably really enjoy this OST. And then you hear these last two. Track 23 is it's a bit cookie cutter. It's almost like it's super epic sounding and instrumentation arrangement wise. But it sounds like I've heard it before.
Why don't we play like 30 seconds of it?
You play the last song?
Yeah, we always play the songs that we like, but let's just highlight some of the things that
the bad songs,
like some of the stuff that we just don't like.
Yeah,
no, keep going.
Here's an example of a bad song. This one's called Here. Do you want to talk about your notes before we hit play?
Yeah, this song just made me super conflicted. It would be fine, and then it's just like, oh, I don't know. There's a lot of dot dot dots in my thing because I was literally thinking
You're waiting.
It's like interesting piece.
I always give the song all the way through like a chance.
No, I wrote as I went on this one from the very beginning. It's like rap over a really powerful orchestra, dot, dot, dot. I just don't know, dot, dot, dot. But then it turns into a kind of a dirty hip hop song that kind of pans out well. And then dot, dot, dot. I'm quite conflicted.
Yeah.
And that's where I ended it because I'm like, I don't really know how to feel about the song, but I didn't like it. It was just like trying to find positivity in it. And I just couldn't.
I put lyrics are so fucking cheesy. Fuck. Song is too epic for that dumb shit. Lame ass last song. Could have been way more epic. It felt recycled. And the more I listened to it, I was like, damn, the song is pretty epic. And the more I listened to the actual music bed, throwing the lyrics out, I was like, man, it still feels like it was recycled epicness from the rest of the OST.
Yeah, and it, you know,
in a bad way. It felt recycled in a bad way, and it was a far cry from OST1's final song.
I also love how, like, really into our notes that we get, that we're, like, talking to ourselves. Like, it's a diary. Our notes
are
a diary.
It's a diary of us listening to this fucking OST. That's all it is. Yeah, no, that was a really bad song.
Let's listen to it. Let's do it. Sounds super epic in the back. Like that orchestra is like really powerful. The chanting and the
but
vocals
it
in the back.
That hard.
No. Even with the rap, you would think that they'd get through this phrase and then it would drop down. And it doesn't. It doesn't. It just doesn't.
It's also heavily compressed. But the rest of them weren't that bad. It doesn't go anywhere. I already feel like
yeah.
led on to somewhere.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The phrasing, you think it would kind of like do something up or down. It doesn't matter, but it didn't. It didn't. It never did. I think that's enough. I think we don't need to show them much more than that. It doesn't really get much different from here. Like, the strings drop out. That's it.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah, we're good. Here's the drop.
Yeah, see?
And then you get more of the rap. Yeah, all right. Yeah, it's enough.
I tried to save you guys.
Yeah. I know. I wanted to keep it going. It was not great.
And when you come from OST1, where the last track was My Hero Academia, and you've got that powerful fucking song to end you off, and you're like feeling real good, you're hyped. Like, this is the last song that you're going to hear from this OST, and I found it to be playful, but I didn't find it to be enough to keep me listening.
I feel like so far in all of our episodes, we've had a couple of rap songs that I've kind of shit on. And I hope that it doesn't come across that I don't like rap music, because I really do. I just don't like when it's done badly.
Okay,
like,
well, here's the
sometimes,
thing.
Sometimes it's really cheesy and the lyrics that they chose, I mean, doesn't rap stand for rhythm and poetry?
Well, that's what I was going to say, is that when you hear rap and you're like, man, this is fucking beautiful. This is great. You know, you think of Kendrick Lamar, who's filled with so much poetry. Like, that fool is a goddamn poet. And there's plenty out there who are the same way. And, you know, when you hear something like this, it's like, it just doesn't hit the same. And so now you have an expectation of what a good rap sounds like and how soulful, and either it can bring you up or it can bring you real, real low. But this just doesn't do it.
It was, one, not very rhythmic.
No.
Rhythms were predictable, and it dropped out, left too much space. And I get that it's doing that probably for dialogue. Then just don't have words there.
Yeah. I think it probably wouldn't have been as, like, you know, a song that I would have starred, but it would have been much better without the vocals on top of it.
Yeah, no, that was not very good. Bad way to end the album, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yep. So on that note, that's all of our notes for the OST. I think we have
Some fun facts.
Emily's favorite fun facts.
Fun facts.
So let's jump into the fun facts section. Emily, take it away.
Yes. So I only got two for you. They're nothing exciting, but they're exciting enough to write them down. The artwork for OST is from a sketch that Kohei Horikoshi, the writer, released on Twitter anticipating the 52nd chapter of the manga. And then they just use it for OST too. And for those of you who don't know what that is, it's them in a band.
Oh, yeah.
It's
them in
a band. White cover. Everybody's wearing white suits.
That's right.
And then my second fun fact is the villain Stain was drawn completely different
from his original version
of it. Very similar, but far more ominous looking to how he initially drew Midoriya. Almost sickly looking, kind of repulsive, shorter hair, had like ribbons going all up his neck where he had like a very long, elongated neck. Very like,
I like how he redrew him though with the no nose.
Oh yeah.
He definitely looked creepy.
He's super creepy. He's very much like a villain from the Marvel Universe. Red. What's that guy's name? You guys know. We're all nerds here. Why can't I think of his name?
You're talking about the original, like...
like the guy from...
guy from The Matrix?
Captain America. Yeah.
That played him?
Yeah.
What the fuck is that guy's name? Red Skull.
Red Skull. It's Red something. He's red. I know this. Very, very Red Skull-ish.
Yeah. Okay. Well... those were great fun facts. Thank you, Emily.
You're so welcome.
And I think on that note, take him out with your infamous outro here. Yes,
one day it will be famous.
Let's give it to him.
Guys, thank you so much for having us in your ears tonight. Yeah.
Thanks for letting us in your ear holes.
Thank
that was great.
You. Yeah.
It's been a pleasure.
It's been a real pleasure. Fuck.
God.
And whether you're taking us with you for the ride or you're chilling at home in your own BBC, we are thrilled to be sharing our enthusiasm about anime, music, and sound effects with you.
There you go. And if you could do one thing for us, if you could go to our Instagram page at Anime Noise Podcast, all one word. It is truly becoming a family over there. I know we say it every single episode, but it really is. Send us your artwork. Engage with us. We answer every message. We post shit all the time. We have fun little games on our stories. Fun facts like Emily just told you. Tips and tricks. Audio engineering. How to set up a home theater.
Fan service.
We got lots of shit out there, so please do not hesitate to message us and engage with us. We love to have you there, and we're very thankful that you're there.
Grateful.
Yes, super grateful. We also have a TikTok. Again, still
don't
underwhelming.
Don't look at it.
We'll get it there, we promise. It'll only just take, 4 years.
When we are able to hire somebody else to come in and do that shit.
I don't know.
Because we are not.
We're going to work on it today. We are going to work on it today.
After we go grocery shopping.
And on that note, you can stream My Hero Academia on Crunchyroll. Where else? Hulu?
Hulu. And
we watched it on Crunchyroll.
Yes. And then I believe it might be on Netflix as well.
Season 2?
I think so.
Yeah. So you got tons of ways to stream it.
Streaming options.
Yeah, tons of streaming options. And I think that's it for today.
I think so.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much. And tune in next week for another episode of
Anime Noise.
Wacha. Bye.
Bye. Adios.
This has been a Beanbag Chair Media production.